Welcome to the Minute of Eight Gang Podcast, episode 362. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
About right here.
Super. Super
podcast, and I'm going to head out to Maker Faire, baby.
Yeah, ooh. Sweet. Well, I have a big IoT Fuse meeting this afternoon. We're going to work on board of directors and all that. Before we get going, I've got to complain about something.
Oh, no.
Again?
So I use Google News, and I go to Google News often before we start recording this podcast just to see if there's something new. And I have one category called UFOs. And the one thing that really bothers me is when, you know, there's articles in there like trucker busted at Canadian border for smuggling aliens. It has nothing to do with extraterrestrials.
Yeah. And you mean aliens as in undocumented workers.
Undocumented workers.
I got that. Okay.
And it's one of those things where I'm sorry, but the droids are not going to take over until they get this fixed. Anyway. I just had to
bring
that
up. English language has a funny, funny double meanings, sometimes triple meanings.
Yes, this is true.
That's hard for algorithms to figure out.
That's right. Well, hey, we do have just a few minutes.
Well, wait a minute. Do you mean these illegal aliens see a UFO? Perhaps
no.
That's what was it.
Okay. No, unfortunately not.
Oh, okay.
Although I am thinking about going out to, flying out to Vegas and then taking a drive up to Area 51.
And I would like to spend just a few moments on the man that has the category UFOs.
I know, really?
Well, I also have one called Zen, and I have another one, neuroscience and quantum physics and, blah, blah, blah.
What?
It's just how my brain works. I'm just interested in all that. But anyway, let's talk about Minnesota stuff, because you know what? I got to tell you, this article about 3M's forthcoming design center is pretty interesting, because my wife went over. She's doing work with 3M, and she went over to their new innovation center and was just raving about it.
Is it done? Is it open?
Well, the innovation center is.
But
this new design center, I don't believe, is. I couldn't see anything in the article. Didn't really say.
No, it just says it's renderings.
Yeah. It just says it opens its doors in spring of 2016, so it didn't say whether or not it was open.
So the guy looking at either his tablet, phone, or a piece of paper on the first two pictures,
yes,
it kind of looks like a bald version of Phil.
Actually, it looks like version of Phil. I'm bald, so, I'm losing my hair. Oh, that guy.
That guy
in the white, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I think he's a weird guy.
Yeah, well, of course, they just inserted all these people in the photo and the rendering.
I think that might be me, that first guy. It might be me.
Yeah, it looks like you.
Got the gray hair, and it's kind of... Yeah, the second guy in the white shirt without any hair. That's not me, for God's sakes.
Oh, All right.
I got some hair.
It kind of looks like the same guy, but whatever.
Hey, we're going off on a tangent here.
So does this really look super cabin-y to you? It sort of looks like a big box store.
Well, it's a cabin. It's cabin-esque. I don't think it's really necessarily, a lot of wood paneling and stuff. I mean, it's sort of inspired by cabin design. But
no, there is wood. I mean, that's what the brown stuff is there. But we'll put a link in the show notes, and you guys can go look at this. I have to tell you that Fast Company has some of the most interesting articles in all of their different areas, including this co-design area. But I think they did the whole cabin thing, because you can see in the first picture in the right that there's like a faux cabin-esque sort of conference room and. But anyway, it's nice.
Very modernish cabin. It could be, in Iowa, especially in Iowa, cabins can be anything from, a parked RV to a trailer, to an actual cabin. So maybe they have something that looks like an RV inside.
Right. Well, I got to tell you that I am very, very impressed with what 3M is up to. I mean, they're really pushing the envelope.
And I'm happy to say a friend of ours, actually somebody that worked with HyperIQ for on and off on some projects, Flynn Smith, was hired as the first UX manager for that new design lab. So she hasn't started yet, so she's looking forward to it. But that's very cool.
Very nice.
It's very cool. So On the other hand, there's another company that's struggling to survive.
Struggling.
Imation.
Yeah.
So they're just going to be a holding company now.
I know. And they have $63 million in liquid funds.
How sad is this? Yeah. Well, especially when they talked about how they had, at one point, 10 years ago, 2,550 employees and $1.2 billion in sales.
Yep.
Yikes. They've sold everything off.
They made some bad calls here.
Right.
And, you know, being in the data storage business during a massive transition, and they were in kind of the data storage that didn't survive, you know, stuff
right.
like CDs and DVDs and, you know.
And floppies.
Yep.
Yep.
Not
yeah,
good.
They never transitioned into, well, I mean, it's tough to have a competitive advantage in flash storage because there's so many companies that have cranked up manufacturing plants for that, but.
Yeah. Their zip drives are really good back in the day, though.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, this
so
is true.
Wait a minute. Can you guys give me a definition of what a holding company is?
A holding company just holds something. In the case
so
of...
it's like the really bad managers say, well, you know, open the door, hand something to somebody, and hold this.
Nope.
I'll be right back. And then they leave.
No. Well, I'll give you one great example. So when I was back in the day when I worked for Pioneer New Media... you know, LaserDisc and CD and all that for business-to-business applications. DiscoVision out in Los Angeles was a four-story black building, and the only people that worked in there were attorneys. And all they did all day long was enforce the patents on optical disc technology. Mm-hmm. And so DiscoVision was a holding company, and all they did was... you know, basically collect money from their patents.
Well, that sounds like an intellectual property, like a patent troll. And a holding company in the purest sense is basically a shell organization just to, you know, to hold assets. So
yeah,
they tend to not do anything. Patent trolls are, you know, that's their business.
Right.
So, you know.
True.
I guess you could say they're holding companies as well, but.
Yeah,
but their business is intellectual property,
right? Well, and then
moving on,
I see that I think you put this in here, Tim, about Minnesota's an emerging player in the video game industry, and
yep.
I had mentioned that last week that Alex, my son, and I had gone to GlitchCon down at the McNamara Alumni Center at the University of Minnesota.
Yep.
And I was very, very impressed with all the things going on and all of the activity and the people involved in development and lots of interest in VR. It was really, really enlightening. I didn't think that there was that much activity going on here in Minnesota.
Apparently there is. And yeah. And who would have guessed that Randy Shaver would be such a big gamer?
Yeah. Well, he was the sports guy at Care 11, so.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope. You pick up and you play Madden a couple of times, and all of a sudden you're 25 years later, you're a big gamer.
Yeah.
Yep, listen to you guys.
Well.
So there's a lot of activity in the game space here. So,
yeah.
It's good to see.
Yep. And then I
don't know. Did you get the emails from the EFF? Like I got the emails from the EFF.
Yeah. Well, I've donated since they started EFF, so I get every single thing.
Same here.
This article was about post that they did was about Minnesota legislators go crazy pushing Dangerous Prints Act.
Right.
And it's all about they're trying to bring through a publicity rights law. That will give Prince's heirs and the heirs of any other Minnesotan, obviously, very broad and indefinite rights to shut down all kinds of legitimate speech and activities in perpetuity. And, you know, this is just like when Cory Doctorow, who's one of the founders of EFF and an author and science fiction author and so on, has been involved in lots of different things with respect to basically digital activism. And he wrote this book, one of his first, called Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom. And it was all about how essentially Disney was the one who essentially got Congress to extend copyright.
Yep.
And by what, 50 years, Tim, or 70?
I think it was 50. Okay. I don't know. It was a long time, and they're trying to prevent their characters and movies to enter the public domain. Correct. They want to have absolute control over all of their works for really forever.
Right.
And that's not the way that the copyright laws are currently structured.
Right. And that's exactly what's happening with this
act. It's gotten more acute over the last 5 or 10 years because of the internet. Because now you could go to, you know, internet website, the Internet Archive comes to mind, where you can watch movies that have lapsed into the public domain.
Yeah.
You know, many of them are old movies, but you know, just imagine it when the movies from the 60s and 70s, you know, enter the public domain, which won't be very long from now.
Yeah.
There'll be some really good movies that will be free and clear.
Right. So. Well, and this proposed Minnesota law, rather than setting a maximum term, it actually sets a minimum term of 50 years and will allow an estate to keep asserting the right to control uses of a celebrity's name and likeness forever. And so, I mean, it's just crazy because, you know, it's the irony, of course, with Disney, because they're the first ones that did this when they got Congress to help them out to keep Mickey in out of the public domain. The irony is virtually everything that Disney did at the beginning was all based on public domain works.
Yep.
And so.
Yeah. That is an ironic twist, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, hey, I'm going to pull the ladder up after I get up to the top of the tower.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's insane, so.
Yeah, I'm going to riff off the Brothers Grimm here.
Right. And
not pay them anything.
Yeah.
And then protect my stuff forever.
It's so sad.
Karma is funny. Well, the serious point of this is who owns our culture? Does society own our culture, or do companies or individuals?
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, it's, you know, at the end of the day, it's.
Wow, that's really deep, Tim.
I know.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, it's you know, it.
It gets dark.
I don't expect. Yeah. I don't expect that the things that I've created, even though they're copyrighted in some cases, most of my stuff's under Creative Commons. But even the stuff that I've copyrighted, you know, I'm not going to care. You know, not
yeah,
that it's generating a lot of revenue.
What happens to that comic strip you launched, you know, when way back when? Was it you know, Steve and the Giant Raspberry or something like that?
Right. Well, I will tell you that I did I wanted to experiment with Google AdSense, so I put it on my blog literally a week ago. I've just never done it because I've always hated ads. And they are contextual and they are pretty interesting ads, actually. I mean, they're doing a nice job. And so far, in a week.
Yes.
I have grossed 33 cents.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Can you believe it?
All right. iConnectDots.com, everybody. Go there.
That's
and
right.
And then maybe you'll make another 50 cents by next week.
Well, can you imagine, though? I mean, seriously, it'd be about $1.20 a month.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Ladies
you could
gentlemen.
Almost buy a cup of coffee for that.
Well, so I could be a use case because my blog's under the Creative Commons. So if I can make money off Creative Commons, maybe there's a case there.
With that kind of money, ladies and gentlemen, this podcast is on Steve.
That's right. Wow. That's right.
And Steve apparently, if you go to this, if you go to his blog, he really likes his iPad Pro.
I do.
No doubt.
I do.
No
it's my favorite.
He likes it very much.
Well, before we leave this story, though, guys, that legislation has been tabled. So I don't know if you saw that or heard that over the course of the last week.
Oh, good.
The
good.
Prinsec has been tabled.
Good.
Excellent.
It's got to go away, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Public pressure.
Yep.
So there was this article that I think that got posted here about startup trends for 2016. And did you guys read through this piece, these predictions for trends of 2016?
Well, yeah. And
Big data, Internet of Things.
Well, and it's talking about essentially the startup trends were – That article was basically talking about how there's this mad scramble for jobs, You know, not for jobs, but for people to fill jobs. And then somebody put in, one of you guys put in an article right afterwards, tech layoffs more than double in Bay Area.
It's like, well, you know, I read this, guys, and it was like, wait a minute, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, Phil. These were the leakers. These were the real scrubs of Silicon Valley.
I see.
The real good ones. They're still looking for the real good ones out there.
Right.
Those are in short supply.
Yeah. You know, everybody wants rainmakers. And so the whole thing about not being able to find people is not being able to find rainmakers. You know, finding that engineer that's been there, done that 15 times and can do it again.
It says here that the hot things last year were drones and VR, and they're still going strong. Okay.
Yep.
VR maybe more than drones. Hiring is rising trend this year in Silicon Valley.
Not so much.
We know that's not true. Founders are still coming up with innovative ideas for new social networks. Haven't seen a new social network take off in quite some time.
Right. Yeah.
Big data is definitely a buzzword, but it's cooling down. Well, that happened like 3 years ago. And then we still don't see compelling Internet of Things products. Well, I disagree. There's compelling Internet of Things products. They're just not on the commercial side.
Right.
Well, no, I think it'd be a breakout because it's a good idea. It provides a good purpose.
And it freaks the hell out of my daughter. Yeah, it's great.
I think that kind of thing. Uh-huh. And, you know, it's not turning lights on and off because that's easy to do with this timers or X10 or whatever. It's innovative things that use technology like a cell phone camera, which is now your doorbell. I mean, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it is a good idea.
So we need more of those in the Internet of Things.
And then the other thing is the Bitcoin hype is over, which
whatever.
I don't know. I don't know if it's
– I think Bitcoin is just like –
It's kind of a
– it's a cool idea.
It's a nerd thing.
Yeah, it is, which is all right. It never was a big deal.
No,
I would beg to differ, but
all right, whatever.
Yeah.
Sachimo or whatever your name is.
That's a rat hole. We're not going to go down. But I mean, a single Bitcoin right now is worth $454.62. So you know, if you had been able to mine a bunch of those in advance,
years ago.
So let's shift over to Apple. I didn't see this set for biggest pivot in history as R&D spending suggests huge bet on Project Titan electric car.
Right. So here's what it is for everybody to kind of catch up a little bit is Apple has they've historically not done a tremendous percentage of their gross revenue in R&D, but there's a graph in this article, and we'll put a link in the show notes from the International Business Times that is suggesting this big pivot. Now, a lot of people talked about the results from Apple's Q2 results, and there was this discussion in there about their annual R&D expenditures, and for 2015... when the Apple Watch launched, it was $8 billion. In 2016, the estimate is it's going to be a little over $10 billion. And 2017 will be over $12 billion. And, as a percentage of revenue, it's growing, fairly significantly. And the big conjecture is that it's all about the Apple car. And then, of course, Apple this week went out and invested $1 billion in a Chinese ride-sharing service called Didi Chuxing, I think it is. And
once again, sharing their wealth with America. God bless.
Yeah, but it's basically an Uber for China, is what it is.
Yeah,
I don't know, these guys are just pissing me off. I'm sorry,
Chinese.
No, Apple. I mean, I don't know. They aggravate me. It's like, all the money they spend is being spent elsewhere and not here. And
it's because the China has had this for a very long time. Where, for example, when 3M first went in to China, now probably 25 years ago, in a big way, the only way that they could get into China was that the Chinese had to have 50% ownership of every plant. So they had to set up separate companies in China, and they had to own 50%. Well, guess what? It's still that way today. Mm-hmm. Is that if you go in, if you want to enter the Chinese market, the Chinese have to, you know, a Chinese organization has to own 50%.
Sure.
And so, you know, it doesn't matter how much money you put into it. And so this is, my belief is that this kind of an investment is a prelude to Apple coming out with a car and being able to sell it in China, frankly, because, you know, the Chinese are really accelerating in both solar and in electric cars. So my assumption is that this is the way that they'll be able to provide these electric cars to the Uber of China. And so they're sort of greasing the skids.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, there'll be less oversight of autonomous vehicles in China. So.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're interested in the metadata as well. You know, location data, the metadata about the customers. I think there's a bigger opportunity there.
Good point.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So
I'm starting to think about going back to my Android phone.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
It's okay. Android still works, Phil.
I know it does.
Well, and so Apple continues with doing interesting things that it feels like they're becoming a little reactive, which is good. They should have done it a long time ago in a lot of different spaces, and they're doing it because sales are downtrending on phones. They're their primary cash cow right now, and they brought in a bunch of podcasters, top podcasters. And the New York Times has this article about how podcasts surge, but producers fear Apple isn't listening. And I haven't felt like Apple's listened for a very long time.
A long time, yeah.
Because, you know, when
why should they?
Frankly,
your podcast is not going to be, you know, live or die because Apple doesn't carry it.
No. And a lot of these top podcasters, though, want the opportunity to get the data about who's listening and who they are.
Not even Apple has that data, though.
No, but I would beg to differ. And
how do they know? Because all they're doing is redirecting RSS feeds.
That's correct. But they know where those are going to. So if you're downloading them on one of the devices that's logged in and connected to iTunes, then you are... you know, they've got your credit card on file. So they know who you are. They know how old you are. They know where you live. They know all the data about your income level and whether you graduated from college. I mean, all that data is wrapped up in your profile. And so they do know a lot about it. And that's essentially what the argument was from the podcatchers was, hey, you guys got all this data. Come on, help us out here. Help us figure out who's listening so that we can, you know, monetize it.
Right. Well, yeah. But so, I think that things would have to change a lot before Apple gave them anything meaningful. Like,
I agree.
You know, they would have to force everyone to use their podcast app. You know, right now it's, you could use whatever podcast app you want.
Right.
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 So the whole thing seemed to be, to me, like a lot of complainers. So
yeah,
that's all.
Well,
and then Marco Arment's article.
Right. And he does Instacast. No. He does...
he does Overcast.
Overcast. I'm sorry. Instacast is another one, another app. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Overcast was one of the first really truly quiet, nice, easy-to-use podcast app, but also one that allowed you to do the 30-second fast-forward. Wasn't he the first one to do that?
I think that Pocket Casts did that first.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, but it's a good app. It used to be $5 and now it's free. And he asked for donations, basically.
Right.
But he's basically saying, if you get all this stuff from Apple, you know, they're going to control podcasting, basically. And right now it's a kind of a nice open playing field. It would probably stifle podcasting. It wouldn't make it any more popular or help their business model.
Right. You know, right.
The large podcaster business model.
Well, and I started podcasting in the spring of 2005. And I just remember my boss at the time, the senior VP of mergers and acquisitions at Lawson, we were going to have a big meeting in the Mahogany Row. All the VPs were up there, and he said, okay, so but before we get started, I want to play you guys something. And we had a docking station in there for iPods at the time. And he pops this iPad or this iPod into this docking station and pushes the play button. All of a sudden you hear, "Welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm Steve Borsch." Oh,
nice job.
And Ooh. Everybody just howls with laughter. Right. And I got rations of shit from that. You know, everybody wow. was like, "Oh, Steve, you're podcasting." Well, now fast forward a year and everybody that was, you know, execs, some execs had left and so on because Lawson was in play and ultimately got acquired a couple years later. But all of them wanted me to help them get into this new thing called Web 2.0. And it wasn't called social media then. I was calling it the participation culture. But it was all about that. And they wanted to be able to figure out how to do podcasting because Apple had gotten into the game in July of 2005 by making iTunes podcast ready. But the kicker is they didn't do squat. All they did was just make it available. That was it.
Yeah.
They didn't do anything. They didn't promote it. I mean, it just took a long time before they really got involved. Anyway, let's talk about Android VR.
Yeah, they're going to come out with a headset, apparently.
So tell. I mean, is this going to be like a Google Cardboard thing? It's going to be cheap, no. Or is it going to be an actual good?
No, I think it's going to be an actual good one. I think the Cardboard was, you know, just an okay. experimental kind of a thing.
Okay.
But it looks like at Google I.O., they're going to actually unveil their own Android VR headset.
Oh, nice.
So I think it'll be more along the lines of what Samsung has been doing.
Okay.
Than an Oculus Rift style deal. So I think it will be affordable and probably require one of the Nexus phones for it to work.
Okay. Well, I just actually, you know, and what's good about that is, when I was talking to a PC manufacturer at GlitchCon, that video gaming down at the U of M conference, there was a company that they make custom PCs up in Moorhead, Minnesota, and the boxes were just awesome. I mean, they looked really great. You know, they had liquid cooled ones. They had ones with neon in them, not neon, LED in them, and all of that. I mean, it was really cool. But I gained a new appreciation for the horsepower one requires to truly do Oculus Rift right. And that was also reinforced by one of the VR sessions that I went into with Alex. I gained a new appreciation for this. This is not going to be for the faint of heart. You're not going to connect an Oculus Rift up to your laptop and get any kind of performance. I mean, you need a great, really good high-end graphics card with a lot of memory and all of that. So it'll be nice to see what they do release for Android and what the base level configuration will be for hardware that you need to run it.
We'll see Google I.O. coming up.
When is it? When's Google I.O.?
June sometime.
Okay.
So it'll be a month out.
I think it's after the Worldwide Developers Conference for Apple, right?
It's either right before or right after. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know offhand, but
yeah. All right. So who put in this next story about Facebook's news selection is in the hands of editors? I've been hearing that they've been de-emphasizing any conservative stories.
Not even de-emphasizing; they've been eliminating them from the trending news.
Really?
Yeah, and they've been putting false trending items in. And you know, this expose by The Guardian just says that it was never algorithms. It was, you know, human editors following orders, apparently.
Oh,
it's a combination of algorithms and editorial.
And people.
Insight,
yeah.
And they, you know, Facebook did release their processes and basically made that public. And it's, you know, it's never been, you know, I think this comes down to the definition of trending and making sure that that's clear in everybody's mind as to what trending means to whatever service they're using.
So, wow.
Yeah. Yep.
So I, you know, it's kind of like not that big a deal to me, but then again,
But again, you used to only rip off certain news articles when you had to do the news when you were in radio, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I don't want to do that one. You'd crinkle up, the paper and throw it away. Yeah.
It's called editorial license.
There you go. Right there. I see.
But a lot of people think that that they're getting objective news in the media these days, and they're really not. And
right.
You know, a lot of people, Facebook is their news media, and it's just as biased as the main mainline sources as well. So
yeah. Well, this one more story here that we'll do is about something that Amazon introduced, and you probably know about the Dash button. That was something that was actually released early last year, and you could buy it for all kinds of different products. And then when you got ready to reorder, you just push the button,
right,
and it would reorder it, right?
Does that work? Is that a Bluetooth device, or does it operate under Wi-Fi?
Wi-Fi.
Or
it's Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you just
it basically adds to your Amazon order, right, but it's a button.
Right. Right.
You're really that lazy. You just can't go in and click.
Yeah, order. I know. But, and I wouldn't do it just because, I mean, when my kids were little, especially Alex, he was always screwing around. I could just see him running around pushing all the buttons. And all of a sudden you got,
I think
cases of product showing up. But,
They send you a notification. So if your kid
you'd
catch it.
Right. Well, so at any rate, this past week, Amazon unveiled their Dash button for IoT. And it's a programmable button based on that Amazon Dash button hardware. And I mean, it's a little tiny thing. It's about the size of a flash drive, maybe even a little fatter, but a little shorter. And you can configure it, and it's, in fact, I did a post on IoT Fuse about it. I'll put a link in the show notes. And it's got all kinds of great developer information. I mean, because that's really where it's at right now. They're trying to get developers to sort of embrace it. But as I looked at this, I went, oh, come on. And then I started to read it, and I started to read the developer information, and I poked around the step-by-step tutorial. And here's what I thought was really cool. Just like right now with SmartThings, I walk into the mudroom and the sensor, motion sensor, triggers a light in there. And it's not a big deal. And I thought, it was cool. I mean, it works. There's a little bit of latency, but it works. And then when I was having issues with my hub and it wasn't working, my wife comes out and she goes, hey, how come the light's not turning on in the mudroom? And I go, oh, blah, blah, blah. And then Elizabeth was over. She said the same thing. And then Alex comes home and he goes, hey, the light didn't turn on in the mudroom. So it's like they were all missing it, right? Because this stuff sort of seamlessly integrates into your life. And I began to look at this button and I thought, hey, the same thing holds true here. It could potentially be this generic device that you could buy and have it pre-configured, and I'm sure somebody will connect it to IFTTT, if this, then that, and you'll be able to program it yourself.
So did you order one of these, Steve?
No, they were sold out. They sold out in one day.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get one. Anyway.
Bummer.
Yeah. I know. Okay, let's talk about the cool thing of the week, my boys.
Let's start with Tim this week.
Okay.
All right. It's been a few weeks since I've talked about a Raspberry Pi cool thing of the week. So
has it really?
I brought it back.
Has it really been a few weeks?
And this was, yeah, I looked back.
Seems like just yesterday.
Yeah, no, I look back in the last several ones I've done, and I haven't done one in a few months.
Now, wait a minute. Does this one actually exist, or is this a Kickstarter?
No, this one actually exists.
Get out of town.
It does. It's called the Pi Top, and it's basically a DIY laptop that you build yourself.
Huh, yeah.
It runs off a Raspberry Pi 3, and it's about a little under $300. So it's a little pricey, but it seems like it's a good development box for a kid. It's a little goofy. It's got a touchscreen off to the right, which I think would be
kind of weird.
Kind of weird, and you have to get used to it, I guess. I don't know why. Their keyboard design is kind of strange.
The trackpad, mousepad type.
The mousepad is not in the middle. It's off to the right. Yeah, it's off to the right, which reminds me of laptops from days gone by where I remember I had a PowerBook that had the track, the little ball thing off to the right, I believe.
Yeah. I think that's pretty easy to get.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, this is another way that you can turn your Raspberry Pi into a full.
Huh. That's cool.
Costs about $300.
Excuse me.
Cool. Might be good for kids learning to program.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Make their own thing. Yeah.
And it's available. It's not just one of these Kickstarter things.
Very cool.
It's software and OS. It's got Python. It uses Scratch, Minecraft, 3D Stash. That's interesting. Cool.
Yep. There you go.
And
languages.
Phil, and what's yours, buddy?
I got the notice from my fine friends at the Sunrise calendar app. I don't know if you guys use Sunrise.
Yeah, I do. I'm kind of pissed.
Wait, what happened?
Well,
they're shutting it down.
Shutting it down because Microsoft bought them out, and they're going to roll all their technology into
Outlook, which is like, really?
Oh, jeez.
So I thought about it, and I don't use the email program because I just use Gmail, and I'm not interested in putting Outlook in. So I went on the hunt for a new calendar app, and I'm now using Fantastical 2. It's not Sunrise was free. This is not free. This is a $5 app. But it syncs with Google, and it's a very similar sort of layout to what Sunrise was. So, yeah. if you just don't want to make that move to Outlook and you use Sunrise, it's not a bad choice, at least for iOS. Now, I don't know if Fantastical does an Android version. Does it? Do you know, Tim?
No, they don't. They're just iOS.
iOS. So that's my cool thing of the week.
Very nice.
And it does have a watch integration, so it's very nice.
Cool. Well, and my cool thing of the week is actually a list called 300 Plus Free Tools for Entrepreneurs and Startups.
How to hire people that are being laid off? Or
no. So, I mean, you know, the first category is free website, logo, hosting, invoicing, and they've got a list of a bunch of companies here. The first one, Logaster, is a professional online logo maker and generator. And I've seen a million of these, maybe not a million, but quite a few. And this is the best one I've ever seen. I mean, just in terms of the quality of the logos that they put out and the editing you can do and so on. But I started going through some of these sites and going, I don't know that one. And I went to it and was like, oh, okay, this is cool. And I found probably 25 sites on here that I'd never heard of before and that I will probably sign up for. So I just thought it was a good list if people want to go through it.
Well, you got your things like your invoice generators.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, there's all these free design resources and color pickers and stuff for inspiration. And I mean,
free business project name generators. That's what I need. I need a project name generator.
Yeah. Well, you never know.
Interesting. Very cool.
So there it is.
Another cool thing of the week.
My cool thing. Well, and then in upcoming events, there's only really one new that I put in.
That next tech summit. Yeah.
Right. Down at COCO on June 30th.
Right.
And so that was looked like a pretty interesting event.
Yeah.
And
check that out.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to head off to Mini Maker Faire today. And then Beta MN is next week. So
sounds great.
Lots of stuff going on. And we'll probably talk about it next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
See you then.
Take care.
Got out in that kitchen and rubbed his food and pay. And I wrote my breakfast cause I'm an hungry man. And I said, shake, rattle and roll. Shake, rattle and roll. Shake, rattle and roll. Shake, rattle and roll. Well, you wonder nothing about Savior, Tiger, soul. Well, them tigers sound you heard, start up so nice. Well, them tigers sound you heard. herbs don't have so nice. Well, you look so warm, but your heart is cold as ice. And then I say, shake, rise and roll. Shake, rise and roll. Shake, rise and roll. Shake, rise and roll. Well, you want then now about save your dog and soul. Save your dagger soul.